Welcome, everyone, to You Can't Eat the Sunshine for the week of April 13th, 2020. I'm Richard Shave, and joining me is my wife, Kim Cooper, and we are in day 27 of Eric Garcetti's famous March 17, 2020 Safer at Home Initiative.
March 19th.
Oh, Mark, thank you. Mark, thank
you. You anticipate me.
Kim Cooper, would you please introduce yourself, darling?
Hi, I'm Kim Cooper, and I am a partner in crime with this fellow Richard Shave, and we're not required to stay at home with masks over our heads and so forth. We give tours of historic Los Angeles, and we're kind of reinventing ourselves in this new quarantined Los Angeles. Happy to be here and to bring the podcast back. You know, we sort of put the podcast in mothballs because we were taken on City Hall. We were kind of landmarked with Los Angeles City Times, and things got really weird. And I can't think of a better time to come back because things are actually even weirder. So hi.
Thank you, Kim. So I just, before I introduce our three wonderful guests, I just want to quickly say, this is a very boring statement. The last 132 episodes, the last 132 episodes have had a very different format that we're taking now. This is, we're doing remote podcasting. And so instead of half an hour of closely watched trains and two in the field interviews and a wrap up, we're just going to jump in with three really great people and dear friends. So without any further hesitation, let me, in the order I choose, introduce our three guests. Allison Martino, please introduce yourself, my dear, and welcome aboard.
Thank you for having me. So yes, I'm Allison Martino, and I run the Vintage Los Angeles Facebook page, which is extremely active, and we speak a lot about historic places and what we are losing.
Perfect. Perfect. Rob Holman. Rob Holman, as I introduce you, I think I need to throw a couple disclaimers out.
Mm-hmm.
Disclaimer number one, you and I went to high school together, so we go back a very long way. Two.
It's not just high school, it's Crossroads.
Correct.
Angelinos know what we mean by that.
Two, Rob, you and I are both founding board members of the California Public Benefit Corporation, Save LACMA. And in fact, you are not only a founding board member, you are its CEO or president, or I'm not sure exactly what your executive title.
He's the lightning rod.
Yeah. So Rob, why don't you, given that great intro, introduce yourself as well.
Hello. Let's not forget that the wonderful Kim Cooper is also a board member.
I was going to get to that. Yeah.
Ah.
She always forgets me.
Never forget her. I don't. Yes, I'm the board chair of the nonprofit organization called Save LACMA, which has been in existence since last summer and has been making great progress ever since then.
Perfect. Okay, and you're obviously going to talk about LACMA, but sort of to get that's a plot spoiler. Stephen Luffman, you are a dear friend. You're a great preservationist. You're a great Angeleno. I'm happy that I coerced you into creating your own website, which we'll get to later. Would you please introduce
yourself? Yes, my name is Stephen Luffman. I am a preservationist and a community activist, and I got involved sort of honestly. I was evicted from my long-term home here in Los Angeles, which happened to be a building built in 1936 by Mendel and Holler, a great architectural and building firm of Los Angeles that built Grauman's Chinese Theater, amongst many other buildings. And a developer bought it and wanted to tear it down, and I could not let that happen. So I was able to save that building and since then many other buildings. And I also am still trying to save the great Litton Savings building on the corner of Sunset Boulevard and Crescent Heights and many other fights. Try to save the city. I have a deep love for the city.
Okay, good. Okay, so we're going to just jump into the deep end here. So what I'd like to do is each of you in turn is sort of going to take the lead, but I encourage everyone appropriately to jump in where you see fit. So Allison, We're going to go back and start with you with Stan's Donuts, and then we'll segue to LACMA and whatever Stephen feels is in his court. We'll sort of wrap up with that. And of course, in the midst of everyone's talk, I want to hear from everyone else too.
And just before we begin, I just want to mention that it's such an odd time for preservationists because, you know, typically we're really active. We go out, we document things, we go to city council meetings. Those aren't really happening anymore. We have the opportunity sometimes to circulate like a ballot measure, which we're trying to do for LACMA. And a lot of people who are quite active in the preservation community now are sitting at home and saying, how can we protect our landmarks at this moment? You know, LACMA unexpectedly started being demolished. We'll be talking about that soon. What can we do as active, engaged Angelenos who've really fought hard and have actually made some great inroads in recent years not to lose all of this great momentum? So I hope that'll be a conversation that will kind of spin around as we talk about specific issues.
Okay. Kim, thank you so much. All right. Allison Martino, I want you to take us to the heart of Westwood. Okay. Dan's Donuts, across the street from the Bruin Theater and the Fox, down the street from the old poster mat. What's going on?
Well, all right. I'm an Angeleno, born and raised, and Westwood Village was our hub, especially in the 70s and 80s. And that's where we all went as kids, college students. It was just the hub. No one would believe it today because it's like a ghost town. But it was, there was that corner there where Stan's Donuts is. Right. You said the Bruin Theater and the Fox, the Hamburger Hamlet, the poster mat, all of that was just a hang. And Stan's is where you went before a movie, after a movie, it had hours. You know, everybody wanted the peanut butter and chocolate donut. That was just a staple in L.A. You knew what that was. And it had been in business for, what, 73 years? I don't quote me on that. How many years has it been in business? We'll just say it's been in business for decades.
Been in business for decades.
Okay. And Stan still was running it in his 90s. And, you know, as Westwood started to die down, Stan's was still going. And one of the great things about my Vintage LA platform on Facebook is it does reach hundreds of thousands and it's very active. And one of the great things is sometimes I get tipped off. My own personal deep throats will send me a message and say, hey, I work down the street and I'm hearing that Stan's rent was increased by 35%. Okay, well, before I go on and post that and get everybody's reaction, I will call and verify that. And that building on the corner there has four other businesses. So you've got a hair salon, an herbal place, and a pizza joint. And I called all of them. And the man in charge of the hair salon who'd been there 27 years was terrified and verified that his rent was increased by 35% early this year. And he had gotten together with all the other store owners and people renting there that they're already looking for another location. I can't imagine that Stan would go out and find another location at his age. So when I heard that they were shutting down because of COVID, I think there's more to that story.
Yeah, it's very difficult to start all over when you're older. And I think that probably the property owners were thinking eventually Stan was going to retire and maybe they didn't want to wait anymore. So many times rents get raised deliberately to push people out and we don't have commercial rent control in the city. One thing that a lot of people have been talking about is this idea of a legacy business registry, which they do have in San Francisco. And it isn't charity from the government. It's a way of just acknowledging that certain businesses are precious because they've been there for so long. They have a personality. They're iconic. They're independent. They're not big chains. And the city should bend over backwards to a certain extent to make it easier for them to stick around. And so it involves putting them on a registry. It's a limit to how many can be nominated each year. And then when they are on the registry, if the property owner does want to raise the rent, there are ways of, you know, maybe giving a tax break to the property owner, giving a grant to the store owner, just ways of making it more economically feasible. It's nothing that we've seen in LA because unfortunately, LA has been run for the last you know, 15 years by this crew of Garcettiites who are really, really into bending over backwards for big corporate developers and don't really care about the scales of the world. And that has to change.
And there's right. so many, you know, there's so many coming out. There's, you know, Swingers just shut down and the Pikey, and I'm worried about Casa Vega. Nate Now's just closed. You know, which
Nate Now's came back and they said, oh no, we're not really closing. They are totally closing. But they're like, no, you misunderstood. We're just closing for a little while.
No, they are closing. I don't believe they're coming back. If they come back, there's a lot of pressure on Irving Azoff. But I can't imagine they would put that post up saying thank you so much, goodbye. And knowing that all the waitresses that have worked there for decades are out of work and are in the dark and don't know where to go now and looking and applying at other diners. So what does that tell you?
It tells you that it's not so good.
So Allison, let me ask you, let's step back. Let's step out of Westwood. Let's step back and let's get about 1,000 feet up in the air. Right over downtown Los Angeles. Let's look east. Let's look west. Let's look at the city all of us grew up in. And I want you, Allison Martino, to tell us what you were concerned about as we are in day 27 of the Safer at Home Directive, asking all Angelinos to stay inside, all non-essential businesses be shuttered. Before this order, 27 days ago, you and I and everyone on this podcast woke up every morning in a cold sweat, just watching things that are core to our existence as Angelinos disappear. So Allison, what are your hopes? What are your fears now?
Well, you know, I was just having this conversation the other day. I was thinking about last year where Musso and Franks had their 100-year anniversary and the Quentin Tarantino movie that celebrated El Coyote and Casa Vega. These restaurants were flourishing again. The Formosa just opened again. What a year they had. And now this year, they're all closed. I do the PR for Dantana's, which is opened in 1964. They have closed a few weeks ago. They were going to do delivery and takeout, but they decided it was probably too dangerous. They don't have the ideal pickup area. Where Mel's Diner, you actually can pull right in and they bring it out to your food like a car hop, like to your car. But for Dantana's, I fear that some of them may not reopen. That's what's worrying me the most. I know a lot of the employees who I speak with daily are applying for other jobs. Of course, they're not getting any work. No resumes are being taken, but the future is unknown and we just don't know when they can go back to work and if their doors are going to open again.
And you bring up a really good point because these legacy businesses are not just a logo and a menu and an owner. They're the personalities of the people who've worked there in some cases for decades. They really, you know, they're as much a part of what makes a Dantana special as anything else. And when you get this kind of natural disaster, it's horrifying to think that we're going to wake up from this one day like Rip Van Winkle and walk out into an unrecognizable Los Angeles. None of us want that. There has to be a way with all of the resources that are being expended. And thank God we're in California and not in one of these states where they're not trying to actually think about how to help the people, even if the federal government isn't going to. There's got to be a way to protect these things that make Los Angeles special. And it can't just be like we saw this morning, Larry Edmonds Bookshop putting out a GoFundMe, which has done really well, thank God. But everybody can't do a GoFundMe. There has to be something systemic to keep all these great places on life support until we can all come back and enjoy them.
Perfect.
Yeah, and so just because a lot of these, you know, restaurants, especially, I mean, a lot of, they don't own their properties. So yeah. If they don't own their properties and they can't keep going and they don't know their future. I mean, I've always said, when you go to these historic restaurants like Musso's and Dantana's, sure, the food is great, but it's more than a meal. It's a community feel. You know the bartender's name. He's been there 57 years. You know the maitre d' has been there 27 years. You know the cooks in the back that have been there 38 years. This is their life. This is their livelihood. Where do they go after that?
Right. And so Allison, let me, and I'm going to ask Stephen to help me on this in compare contrast. So Allison, let me just start a question for you with the statement, you are not a preservationist, right?
And I want you to. Yes. I mean, I don't like to say I'm not a preservationist. I support preservation. I will do everything I can. But, you know, I am a documentarian. I start conversations online. I'm a news reporter on Spectrum. I am an Angeleno. I like to keep our history intact. So
I would compare you to Huell Hauser, who pretty much never, like, you know, waved a flag in front of City Hall and said, this must stop. But he was an incredible advocate and documentarian, and he created this voice for what is cool and old. And preservationists who want to do that more, you know, down and dirty in the gutters sort of fighting could pick that up. Although, you know, he left Tennessee after getting into a big preservation pissing match with the wife of the governor. And I think it's no coincidence that when he came to L.A., even though he produced his own show and he had his independence, he didn't become that kind of person. He obviously had a taste of how political and painful preservation could be, and he found a different way to be of service, as you have, Allison.
Correct. And I do believe that the stories that live in all these places, they do need to be told, and sometimes they don't get their chance.
Perfect. And so, Stephen, let me ask you, how does that compare to what you do as a preservationist? And I'm not asking.
Well, there are definitely overlapping.
Out, what are these intersections?
Speaking
and overlapping.
I actually wanted to bring up, like, maybe there's some good, a little bit of good. It's a horrible time, but maybe there is some good to come out of this, and it'll press a pause button on some of the rampant devastation that's going on in the city. I especially see, I hope, possibly, that Litton might, the Litton building, which is still a Chase Bank building, and my understanding is that the developers having problems before this happened, raising money to build their project, and this could possibly be a good thing as far as preservation of that building's concerned. And maybe there's other projects too. And maybe it'll be time for the city to take, there might be opportunities for preservation in that.
I think that you're right, because when we saw that first virtual city council meeting where they were on Zoom for 11 hours straight, it wasn't like a city council meeting in the past where they'd already decided how they were going to vote and they walked in and they'd clearly made all the deals. They were actually legislating in real time. They were really bad at it. And it gave me hope. Because I thought, hey, you know what? This means that they all know that they're wired. The FBI is listening to every conversation. And they're not going to be doing these special things to make developers happy
for a little while.
They're actually going to have to justify their votes. Here's hoping.
So I see we, as far as what Allison does and when I do, you kind of work in tandem. I mean, there are very important buildings that are both culturally and architecturally important, and they often intersect. And I also love the everyday culture of Los Angeles, of Musso's. I moved back to LA. I lived in New York for many years, for 10 years, and I moved back to Los Angeles. And my one goal, I told my partner, my girlfriend for many years, was that I want a bartender at Musso's to know me. And I achieved that goal with her help, actually. And Ruben knew what my drink was and knew me, and he was a part of our lives. I listened to hours of him talking about everything.
He didn't 86 you. That's even better.
What a drunk certain writers were to tales of stuffing donkeys in cars in Mexico.
God bless. God bless your soul.
What a guy.
Not what a guy. Good. All right.
Donkeys.
I want to keep moving. Allison, I'm going to ask you a favor. I'm not going to ask you to speak on LACMA in any official capacity, but what I'm hoping you can do is just share with us a LACMA memory, and that will let us just kick over this ball into Rob's court, and Rob can start the proper discussion of LACMA and its demolition. So Allison, anything about LACMA, go.
Sure. I mean, I grew up here. How many field trips at school did we take to LACMA And I was really, really excited to be a part of an art project there when I was about 10 years old. And we all had to draw and create photographs and paintings and of Martin Luther King. And mine was chosen, and it hung in there for a little while. I wish I still. I know, it was really exciting. And they had
it's probably in the Macula archives. When they reopen it, we'll have to get a picture of that.
We have to. I have a picture somewhere of it when they took it from me. And then they had all the kids. There was like a lot of kids from different schools that were able to be in this project. And they put our handprints in the cement there. Ooh. And this is from 79 or 80. So it's one of my earliest memories of understanding what the history and culture of LA was, just being at a museum. I fell in love with the buildings. How could you not? I mean, how could you not fall in love with that structure, those structures, and just the park area and the grass and the water fixtures. I remember water fixtures.
Yeah.
That was such a thing when I was growing up, and those are gone. I can just say this, again, with the Vintage LA page and all the people that are on it, that day when it was when they were bulldozing it, I must have gotten 50 texts from various friends that heard about it, and it sort of domino effect. And I had friends that went down there on Wilshire Boulevard and took photographs and sent it to me and video. And that started to happen pretty quickly. And of course, you know, we were crying through it. And, you know, people ask me, what do people think about this? Go to my page and look at the posts I put up, because I'm a conversation starter. I'll say, what do you think of this destruction? What do you think of this vanity project that is taking over? And you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of comments coming in that, you know, I can print out and I can send them wherever I need to send them, but it speaks for itself. I would say 90% of my page is against it. The other 10%, not trying to say they don't know what they're talking about, but they don't live in LA.
Perfect.
So that's all interesting.
Okay, great. Good. So I think, Rob, why don't you, I'm going to ask you, just as the board president of the California Public Benefit Corporation, Save LACMA, I'd like for you to explain to us when demolition on the Bing Theater, which is part of the LACMA campus, began, and bring us up to speed as quickly as you can. And thank you, Allison, for that great introduction to the Los Angeles County Museum of Art.
Thank you.
I can start by sharing a memory of LACMA that I have, and that is, it's the place where I met my wife. We were both members of their young professional group, Avant Garde. And she and I had our first serious conversation on the roof of the May Company building, which is now going to be the Academy Museum, but previously it was LACMA West.
Right.
The building, incredibly, was donated to LACMA to be used, but Michael Govan decided to give it to the Academy at a very cut-rate price, which is disappointing. But I could share with you that, just like with Allison, we had never seen such feedback about the demolition of it on Twitter and other social media sites from so many people from across the spectrum, every community, shocked that they were demolishing the original campus, and especially that they started with the Bing Theater, which I was reminded, as were y'all, that it has its own special history within the film, music, and social community that was truly devastating. And then on top of it, LACMA decided to start the demolition process just after we were all told to stay at home that week, that it would be the toughest week during this coronavirus episode.
This is about
not even
this
go
was about
to the
day 14 of the Safer at Home.
Right,
initiative.
But then they said that, you know, it was a really dangerous time to go out. It's true, it was the toughest week because we all opened our Twitters and saw this horrible sight.
And then on top of it, it was also the week where we observed Passover, which is the acknowledgement of the ancient plague, and how blessed we should be that we will have survived it. And then it was also Holy Week.
So basically you're saying that Michael Govan is the Pharaoh.
I think he kind of is, yeah.
This is so weird. Can we just eat his hat? No, wrong guy. This metaphor is getting
weird. Or if you remember Mask of Red Death, Edgar Allan Poe's very short story, he's Prince Prospero, where he holed up in his castle while everybody else was dying from the plague until, of course, the plague showed up at his door. And then to give greater symbolism, it was very dark, rainy, and cold that whole week.
Yeah.
So it really was a terrible week and very troubling. And, you know, Save Blackman, we've tried to be very objective. We do have a mission. We've not tried to be hysterical at all or, you know, debase ourselves or to shame others. But it was an emotional time, and we shared our emotions as best we could and really spoke out against what was going on. And we've really actually given every opportunity to Michael Govan himself, the Board of Trustees, the County Board of Supervisors, to really rethink this plan and how wrong it is. And then just today, the county, through its CEO, has released that they will have pretty much at least a $2 billion deficit coming on, and that they don't foresee sales tax income getting any better. Actually, there's going to be about a 50% reduction in sales tax revenue for the next year. And they're looking at 10, 25, and 50% cuts in services, vital services for the county. And yet here they are giving LACMA $450 million to do this, which we think is wrong, of course, but it is. And, you know, LACMA has 22 multi-billionaires with a B on its board, and quite a few multi-millionaires who could well afford this demolition and vanity project, as Allison said. But they're essentially accepting government subsidies for this, which nobody really wants. You know, they like the campus. They loved it. They have a lot of memories of it.
Most of it's still there.
And here they are.
Right. So
we could still stop.
So Rob, let me ask you to stop for a second. Stephen, you were with Kim and I. You are a participant in
the
preservation seminar, Michael Govan, the director of LACMA, staged the last weekend of May of 2019. You and the Bing Theater, you and Kim and I ate really good baba ganoush with Wassa rye crisp crackers that I'd made, my baba ganoush, for lunch. And so I'm hoping that you and Rob, you can ask Rob some questions and just sort of lead us around
the also grew up at LACMA. I took art classes there as a young child and in the Bing Theater building, actually. And then we had the original Calder poster on our walls going up, and it was a huge part of my life. But I was actually saying, okay, I understand the buildings were outdated, they didn't work.
Yeah.
My big problem, let me ask Rob this, is my understanding is that what they're building is actually smaller than what the space we had there. Is that true?
Their original plan with the Zumtor building was to have 170,000 square feet. They reduced it now by 60,000 square feet because the original plan is just far too expensive. Chances are they're going to reduce it even more as they start building this. They call that value engineering. And the overall square footage is going to be smaller than what we have now. If you recall, Govan wrote an open letter or an op-ed piece from the LA Times last year saying it's big enough. But what we're going to have is big enough. And that was really kind of insulting to all of us, especially to the collection itself,
Yeah, one of the things he said that I was at a hearing, I was on the neighborhood council, and he spoke to us.
And it's going
to
be stored.
And he said, I wouldn't want to run a museum any bigger than what we're building. And my feeling is maybe that this isn't the museum he should be running.
Well, no, because he's got friends in the Middle East who desperately need to art wash their terrible, you know, human rights histories, and he should probably just pack up and get out of here. But he's not doing it until he gets what he wants. You know, Rob, you pointed out. He spoke to Zumthor before anyone even knew that he'd been hired as the director of this museum. This has been a master plan. He really is sort of a destructive genius. You have to admire what he's done. He's found a small cadre of the board who are supportive of him. Somehow he's managed to quiet the rest of them. I don't know why Bill Amundsen chose not to say anything until it was essentially too late. The Amundsens are incredibly important to the history of the museum. But here we are. And I think that the reason that no one's chipping in to build the Zumthor building is none of them want it. They didn't want it in the first place. They don't want it now. They're all just waiting now for this all to go belly up, which we all know it will. And then one of them is going to come as the hero, have their design competition, pick their favorite architect,
and
get the building
I
they want, hopefully on the proper side of the street. That's not the way to run a public museum.
I mean, among the other things I'm concerned about is I see great value of having the museum offices at the museum, which he doesn't. it's important to walk through the museum every day or every few days and not be across the street or down somewhere else. It's just,
Or Palgate, where the rent's cheaper.
Allison, do you have any questions for Rob? Because I sort of want to start to bring this on home, but I know that Rob has some stuff he does want to put on the table before we're done.
Well, who are the board of directors? And what do they say about all
good question.
Yes.
Rob?
Well, those who do say anything about it say how it's such a wonderful thing for the community. And people are like Brian Seacrest, Linda Resnick, Tony Ressler, who's a private equity guy, and really not looking at Nicholas Berggruen, who is building a mindfulness institute near the Getty Center. And he said that he would have liked to have seen a much larger museum, but he thinks the one that they're building is okay. I've heard that there are dissenters on the board. We know that the Amundsen Foundation is not giving any more money to purchase art. They've also given a lot of money to help maintain the museum. And that's because they never got an answer to their questions dating back to 2006 as to how they're going to hang and showcase the art. But I think what's not being said that's truly telling is that the board hasn't given enough money to support the project.
Right.
If you look at the 22 multi-billionaires, if they each gave about $45 million, which, you know, some have, Elaine Wynne gave, or pledged, I should say, $50 million. That would be $1 billion, and they could build whatever the heck they want. But they have not given a lot of money for the project, and that speaks volumes.
If they had done that, it would really take the wind out of our sails as a nonprofit, because even though we'd say, you know, there needs to be a public feedback loop, there needs to be community representation on the board, it is hard to argue with an institution that has found a lot of wealthy people who ensure that it grows and stays sustainable. But they're actually coming with their cup in hand at a time when people are getting thrown out on the street and are getting very, very sick and dying. It's, you know, it was really painful to see them do this before the pandemic. And now it just makes you think they're not very nimble thinkers if they don't see what's so clear to all of us, which is that everything has changed And we're all going to have to pull together and tighten our belts and be a lot more careful with the money that we have.
I think let's go back to the harbor.
Stephen, are there any other questions you have for Rob? Because I do want to bring us back into harbor here. Okay, great. Perfect. All right, so Rob.
Foghorn noise.
Okay, so I'm going to be the tugboat. So Rob, as we sort of wrap up LACMA, I want you to tell us about the proposed ballot measure, which is not done yet, but is very much in process. So what's happening with the Save LACMA ballot measure?
And what will it do?
So the Save LACMA ballot measure is very simple. It has four essential elements, and they would be addendums to the county code. In the code, it talks about the LA County Museum of Art, as well as the Natural History Museum. But this code was updated back in 1965 when they opened the new location from where they were at the Natural History Museum in downtown, or Exposition Park, and to where they are now in Miracle Mile. The interesting thing is that when they created this, they let the county donate some money or give some money for the operations of LACMA, but they left it up to the private board, which is called Museum Associates, to raise money for the acquisition of art and any additions or updates to the campus. What's happened now is that they're reaching out to the county more for donations, and the county still gives money to it. And the other curious thing is that, unlike many, if not most, of public arts institutions in the country where public members sit on the board, Museum Associates has no public representation on the board, so that there are no, you know, like Sheila Kuehl should be on it, and she's the board supervisor, Lackman's in her district, or city council member.
Potentially these board meetings could be like some eyes wide shut situation. We have no idea what goes on there.
No transparency, which is, you know, no real transparency, which has been going on, you know, up to this moment. We have no idea what the interior of this new building is going to look like. They've still not given us an idea of what that's going to
look like. So where are we as a nonprofit with getting this ballot measure filed?
So the ballot measure has four elements. There would be public representation on it, any present and future additions to the campus would require a design competition and public review and approval, that the county can only give a certain percentage. We're saying 20% of funding for any new projects. And finally, the LACMA cannot sell or collateralize its art, which may just very well happen. Okay. So where we are now is that the ballot measure has been successfully filed with the county clerk's office. They've accepted it. It's being reviewed by county council. And once they approve it, we are given the green light to get signatures to put it on to the ballot. And then we need to garner those signatures by July 7th so that it can be on the ballot in November.
Perfect. Perfect. Okay. All right. We're gonna bring this on home. Allison Martino, what do we have to look forward with you in the next couple of weeks?
Well, I'm going to share this podcast, okay, that's for sure.
Thank you. We'll be sharing it too.
I'm starting my own podcast as well to keep these conversations going. I don't want to see anything else. I have a question, though, question about LACMA. I mean, all I've seen are photographs and footage. I can't bear myself to go down and see it in person. There's these craters. It looks like a horrific war zone. What can be saved and how can it be preserved at this point?
You know, it's interesting that you bring that up, because when we did that preservation conference that Michael Govan dangled in front of our noses for 2 years, and then when it was ready to be announced, he didn't put our name on the website, and finally we got a weird phone call from him where he essentially said, "Why are you still being so mean to me on social media? I thought we had an understanding." And we said, basically, we're going to say whatever we want to say, and then he gave us 10 minutes at the conference. And when we were there, and we spent both days there, at this so-called preservation conference that, you know, had a lot of great people, but LACMA didn't actually promote it to their mailing list, as far as I could tell. He made a big fuss about how they were really excited about salvaging all the beautiful wood and fixtures inside the Bing. And you would think if they had actually done that, there would have been a blog post on the Unframed blog about how great it was and the stuff was going to be, you know, kept, and maybe some people in the community would have an opportunity to bid on it and have some for their personal collection, or it would be integrated into one of the cafes. Nothing. And so I've been squinting at those videos and photos that are coming out, trying to see if there's any splintered wood. Because Michael Govan did say that he was concerned that the wood was kind of cheap and it might be difficult to take it off. So I really don't know what they did. But at this point, as far as we know, although they have demolition permits for all four of those buildings on the Wiltshire side that are older, including the Art of the Americas building, and they could potentially start knocking them down at any time, they're clearly working one at a time. They started with the Bing, which is the smallest footprint of all of them. And we desperately hope that, especially with this new announcement of the incredible financial deficit that the county will be facing, that someone will hit the pause button and keep what we have, which are still very usable buildings, and figure out what the future of LACMA looks like. Because, you know, what Rob didn't say is that if we get this ballot measure onto the November ballot, when the whole world is going to show up to vote, it's called the Save LACMA measure, and everyone is going to vote to save LACMA. And retroactively, the county and museum associates are going to be held to a very different standard than they have been. And it's going to make it very difficult to move forward with this project. And they really need to think about that. I don't know if they think that we're not serious, but we're serious. And so is all of Los Angeles.
Right. But I think what Allison's question is too, and Rob, maybe you can answer this. The Bing is gone and I can't bring it back. But there is a gaping hole in the Amundsen building. Rob, is that a demolition or is that just an exploratory hole for abatement? And I think that's really to what Allison's question is getting to.
Well, the Bing is gone, but the question, to answer a question with a question, is the Bing really gone? In other words, if and when this ballot measure passes, what we're going to have to do, what LACMA's going to have to do, is revisit this whole situation, because we're looking at present and future projects, as it says in the ballot measure. And if you look at the environmental impact report, the EIR, it does show that there was an opportunity to respectfully rehabilitate the campus, taking down the Hardy Holtzman edition, the 1986 edition, which nobody really likes, and reviving the original Pereira campus. So could the Bing be back? It's possible. And this is what we were talking about before. You know, their lack of transparency that LACMA has been showing includes them saying, Govan saying that it was too expensive to rehabilitate and renovate the Pereira campus. We don't know that for sure. What we do know is that Govan let the original campus fall apart. He jokes about it in a recent interview, which you find on YouTube, that they were calling it LEAKMA because it was riddled with leaks. But, you know, what that says is that they made no effort to repair the leaks, fix the roof, take care
it's
of the
called
original
demolition
campus.
By neglect.
So yes. Ideally,
it's called demolition by neglect. It's really a terrible
thing. Yeah. Not even, yeah, I mean, planned obsolescence, if you will. And now they keep saying, LACMA keeps retweeting, oh, they're four aged buildings. As we had written in our recent email blast, you know, thank God they hadn't had any control over the Guggenheim in New York or the Louvre, because those are very, very aged buildings. And to say that a building has an expiration date just flies in the face of them. So we could bring the big
better.
Back. Okay, I'm gonna bring this home, Allison. I'm gonna try one more time to answer your question from a totally different angle. In January of this year, the demolition permits for the four buildings from the Pereira campus were filed and accepted by the County Department of Public Works. For the history of development at LACMA, has been contingent upon demolition permits for older buildings before pledges by donors are turned into checks. So I think that the demolition of the Bing has been a long time coming, but the demolition for the other three original buildings might not, the permits might not have been filed if they hadn't needed them, the demolition permit, to turn pledges into checks. And so I think that's driving this whole thing.
Maybe that's how they're paying their 550 employees. They're one of the few museums that hasn't said, well, we're closed, we have no money coming in, we're going to actually furlough our staff or encourage them to get on unemployment. LACMA can't afford to have any more bad PR. So it's just one of many questions because there's no public representation on the board. We don't know what's happening. Maybe David Geffen wrote a check for everybody's wages to continue to be paid. We just don't know. But I think it's worth keeping asking these questions and fighting, because until it's all gone, it's not gone. And even then, it's not gone because it lives in our hearts. LACMA obviously shaped all of our lives, perhaps Rob more than anyone else. And thank God for it.
Okay, good. All right.
We do know that demolition had to happen because we do know that the demolition had to happen for them because most of the money that LACMA has received for this project has been in the form of pledges, not cash. And those pledges are tied to the building of the new building. So tight with money, they had to rush forward with this demolition. You know, anybody's sentiments about it or the time of year or what's going on with this global pandemic.
You're breaking up, and I'm just going to interrupt you, and I'm just going to stop this. I don't know what happened, but we didn't hear anything you just said, and it's okay.
Because there'll be more conversations. Everyone's going to sign up for your really powerful newsletters from Save LACMA, which have been eliciting some really snarky, bitchy responses from board members. So obviously you're getting under their skin and you're going to keep doing that, because not only are you ticking off board members, but you're giving hope to a lot of Angelinos who care. Thank you.
So Stephen Luftman, I want to thank you. Allison Martino, I want to thank you. Rob Holman, I want to thank you.
He forgot me.
Kim, you and I are going to sign off.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So there are guests.
I'm stuck with you. I want to say one more thing.
You make a great point, Allison.
I can't get the image of Ed Ruscha's artwork of LACMA on fire. It has a whole new meaning. You know, when you
I can't believe they didn't send it.
Okay. So I'm going to say this on mic. Rob, Allison, and Steven, do not close your computers. Do not close this window. I know this is bad form. I'm talking about the operation of recording the podcast.
Hey, it's not easy to get all these people together in one place when none of us are in the same place, except you and me.
Kim and I are going to sign off in a minute. I'm going to hit stop, and you're all going to be able to hear me, but we're all going to stay on the line until this has been uploaded to the cloud server of Ringer. Okay? So Kim Cooper, my wife, my co-host of all these 133 episodes and the love of my life, What are your closing words for people on day 27 of Safer at Home Initiative, directed by Mayor Eric Garcetti, and in the face of a pandemic?
Okay, gang, we are living through something that Los Angeles has not seen since the outbreak of the bubonic plague in 1924, since the great flu in 1918. It's actually bigger than that because it's hitting the entire city. And we are all in this together. And all of us have something to bring to the table. All of us have something to contribute to what the future of Los Angeles is going to be. And although this is really depressing and scary, and a lot of our friends and neighbors and small businesses that we care about are hurting right now and are worried that they're not going to get through it, and some of them are not, a lot of us are. And I think we have an opportunity, a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, to actually make the Los Angeles that's worth living in, that reflects all of our hopes and dreams and faith and inspiration. We all came up in an LA that was very different from the LA that we're in now. And I really believe that the LA of 2020 is going to look a lot better than what we've had for 15 some years. And I think we should just all have hope and think about how we can kindle our connections, do good work from this strange situation, not have the phone ring in the middle of the podcast. Darling, who is it? Is it your mother?
I don't know.
I almost forgot the most important thing. I am so impressed that Stan's managed to stay in business, considering how many donuts Richard's mother conned out of him by being charming over the last 50 years.
God bless you, Kim. I can't believe the phone is ringing.
I can.
Oh, my God.
Hey, it's funky.
Okay, Allison, Stephen, Rob, please do not close your computers. I'm going to upload this to the cloud. We're going to keep talking to you even after we stop recording. I want to thank everyone for listening to episode 133. Of You Can't Eat the Sunshine.
No, I say You Can't Eat the Sunshine. Oh, we don't have a structure anymore. Thanks for listening. We'll be back soon. Take care out there and, you know, wash your hands.